First, I would like to introduce to you Professor Roland Hoffman, who is head of placement, who will bring us up to date. And he has a very interesting job interviewing all of the students who go out. And he was sharing with me the other day, and he said, you know, occasionally I really get concerned about a student. And I said, why, what happened? He said, well, I was interviewing this one student. I was asking him, you know, what kind of church would you really like to go to? And he said the young man looked at him very seriously and said, to a red brick one. And so, Professor Hoffman, if you will.
You may have noticed that Manny was at my table before dinner and again during dessert. It's hard for him to let go of a thing once he starts. He said, Hoffman, you're not supposed to be in here incognito. The faculty is meant to mingle and to be known. And I said, well, name tag? He said, as long as you wear it there, you're incognito. You need to put it down here. It's a joy to bring just a few notes about placement to you because it is really wonderful to be able to say that Concordia Seminary, alive and strong, is injecting new life into the ministerium of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at a rather strong rate each year. In fact, we can say that in this placement year of 1980-81, we will be adding the equivalent of 2.6% of the entire active roll of ordained clergy to the workforce of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. This year, we have already placed 104 Master of Divinity students, 29 colloquy candidates, and according to information on my desk, before this current year expires, we will be placing at least one more Master of Divinity student, a deferred candidate, becoming active in response to a need at a synodical school, and 18 more colloquy candidates for a total of 152 for this year. And the best news is that the number will be one-third greater next year, according to the number of vicars now out. Even better news than the numbers, though, it seems to me, is the fact that these men are entering such a great variety of ministries. Now, of course, we need great numbers who are willing to go happily and joyfully into a rather usual Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation. But with our ambition as a church dedicated to the Great Commission to spread the gospel to more and more peoples, more and more kinds of peoples, and more places, we need to have men who are willing to enter atypical ministries too. To illustrate the level of willingness which we, thank God, are finding in our students, I would just like to tick off a few figures about the somewhat special ministries which will be entered within the next few weeks by men who received their calls last Thursday evening. Four of them will be going into 100% black ministry, even though only one of the four is himself a black. Nine of them will be going into black-white integrated ministry. One entered 100% Hispanic ministry, and four white Hispanic integrated ministry. One received a call into 100% Asiatic ministry, a colloquy student, himself a Korean. He will be serving a Korean ministry in Chicago. One man, deaf ministry. One man into an integrated situation of Caucasians and Native Americans or American Indians. One man into foreign missions to be a seminary professor and evangelistic missionary at Obididim, Nigeria. 22 special ministries out of those placed this spring. And if we want to extend the idea of special ministry just a little bit, it seems to me that a missionary at large, wherever it is somewhat of a special ministry. 8 of our men received missionary at large calls. And lest we slight anyone at all, perhaps we should acknowledge that there's something special about a native of the United States entering ministry in Canada. And we're glad to say that this year as last, 6 of our graduates are going to Canada. I don't like to invite you to wallow with me in figures and ultimately get lost, but perhaps that's just enough to be representative of the kind of joy that I have in my work as director of placement, just enough to be representative of the kind of blessing the Lord is bringing to his church through Concordia Seminary, and just a sampling of the kind of wonderful thing which you are helping to happen as Concordia Seminary's lay leadership group.
Actually, I did not tell Professor Hoffman that. I told him to sit down. He said, I am sitting down. You know, I have been at the seminary for approximately 3 months, and before I came here, I did a little homework on the area in which the seminary is located, and I found out an interesting fact which some of you may or may not know about Clayton, and that is when, back in the early years when Clayton was started, Clayton did not grow very much because they always said there was a haunted house here, and so they try to get rid of this feeling in Clayton, and so they offered $100 to anyone who would stay from 7 o'clock in the evening till 7 in the morning in that house. And the first man who went in there was a large truck driver, and he went in there at 7 o'clock in the evening, and 5 minutes after 7 he came running out. And they said, what's the matter? And he said, I barely got in there, and I looked up and I saw these 3 pairs of eyes, and they were staring at me, and I just couldn't handle that. So the next night, another fellow tried it, and the same thing happened. By 5 minutes after 7, he came running out, and they asked him what happened, and he said, there were these 3 pairs of eyes staring at me, and I just couldn't take that. Well, the next evening, they finally got a Lutheran man to go in there, and he stayed from 7 o'clock in the evening till 7 in the morning. And he got in there, he sat down, and he looked up, and he saw those 3 pairs of eyes. So he took out his Bible and he read for 20 minutes. And after he got done reading, he looked up and he saw those 3 pairs of eyes. So he prayed for 20 minutes. And when he got done, he saw those 3 pairs of eyes. So he sang hymns for 20 minutes. And when he looked up, he saw those 3 pairs of eyes. He's okay, fellows, he said, you've had the service, now we're going to take up the offering, and they disappeared. The only reason that I mentioned that is somebody gave me a note and they said that there's an envelope there at your table, and that if you really want to know what the cost of the dinner and the wine is, it amounts to $6.60. And so if you're wondering why the doors are locked, no, they're not locked. But if you didn't have any wine, we'll let you buy for $6.30. No, if you want to contribute toward this, it will certainly be appreciated, but we leave that entirely up to you. We have another fine gentleman on our faculty, Professor Hempelman, who is not only teaches, but he has been in charge of admissions and also in recruitment. I tell you a rather interesting thing about him. Prior to coming to the seminary, he was in the parish ministry for a number of years and did an outstanding job, and he was in Oregon before he was called to the seminary. And when he received that call, he said, I met with my congregation. And he said, I explained to the congregation very carefully how Jesus had called me into the ministry. He said, then I told them how Jesus had called me to this particular congregation. And he said, then I explained to them how now Jesus was calling me away from this congregation, and he said the entire congregation got up and sang, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." Professor Hempelman, if you would, please.
Thank you very much. It's always nice to be among Lutherans who understand our Lutheran language. It's like the lady who visited one of our Lutheran churches. She said to the usher, "Good morning. I sure do love the Lutheran church and its beautiful lethargy." And the usher, he blinked a little bit, and he said, "Madam, if you would sit down in front, I'm sure that you will find the agnostics much better there." By the way, our choir sings Acapulco. As you can tell, I don't have a prepared speech, but I did ask Mrs. Fogg, who's sitting beside me, what you all would be interested to hear tonight, and she said, "Well, we'd like to hear about, for instance, what kind of students do you have? The quality of students." Well, we had one in question here not too long ago, brought him to the admissions committee for an interview, and one of the members of the committee said to him, "What part of the Bible do you like best?" And he said, "The New Testament, sir." And another member said, "Well, what book of the New Testament?" And he said, "The book of parables, sir." And another member said, "Well, would you mind telling me one of those parables?" And the candidate began. He said, "A man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among thieves. And the thorns grew up and choked that man. And he got in his chariot, and he met the Queen of Sheba. And she gave that man, sir, 1,000 talents of gold and silver and 100 changes of raiment. And he was driving along furiously, and as he went under the branch of a tree, his hair got caught. And it left him hanging there suspended for 40 days and 40 nights. And the ravens brought him food to eat and water to drink. And one night, while he was sleeping there, his wife Delilah took a scissors and cut off his hair, and he fell on the stony ground, and it began to rain. And it rained for 40 days and for 40 nights, and he hid himself in a cave. A man came by and said, 'Come and take supper with me.' But he said, 'I cannot come because I married a wife.' And the man went off into the highways and byways and compelled him to come in. And he went on, and he came to Jerusalem, and he saw Queen Jezebel sitting in a window. And she was laughing at him, and he said, 'Throw her down out of there.' And they threw her down. And he said, 'Throw her down out of there again.' And they threw her down 70 times 7. And of the fragments that remained, there were 12 baskets full. So whose wife will she be in the kingdom?" Well, no one on the committee felt qualified to answer this candidate, so we accepted him. Seriously, the Word of God is very clear in Ephesians 4 that He gives gifts to the church. And among those gifts are pastors and teachers who equip all of us for the work of ministry. And God has blessed Concordia Seminary for the 1980-81 academic year with 724 of His gifts. And 155 have already applied for the first year, next year. And if that should be the case, there could well be at least 750 students in the 1981-82 academic year. Those are gifts of God that have been entrusted to His church, that we would train them through the scholarship that's offered here on our campus, as well as the many parishes, many of which I'm sure you are members of, to be ministers of the gospel. And these men come because they have been touched by God to live a life of love and service to Him. They realize that Jesus shed his blood so that they could be his, live under him in his kingdom, serve him in everlasting righteousness, innocence, and blessedness. And it's out of a desire for that service that they come here. One of the things that you might be interested in terms of recruitment, would be the fact that for the last 3 years, Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, goes to visit all of the synodical schools and colleges together. We believe that that's the better part of good churchmanship, and also the fact that we can together present the picture of ministry in the church to all the young men who have begun their training on a pre-seminary level in our synodical schools. And we generally start on the East Coast and go across the country, and we visit all the synodical schools, plus some universities that are public, or else private, but do not belong to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. For instance, we go to a school by the name of Yale. Maybe many of you haven't heard of that, but that's where Dr. Bowman went to school. Yale University, we go there. We go to the University of Nebraska, University of Wisconsin, California Lutheran, Pacific Lutheran, colleges and universities across the country, because there are young men today who have the desire to study for the ministry who didn't choose to go to one of our synodical schools for whatever reason. And so we do want to meet them and help them in their admission process too. The complexion of our seminary represents the fact that still most of our students come from synodical schools. 72.7% of our classes right now are graduates from synodical schools. You can add to that another 4% of students who came from other Lutheran schools, and that makes a rather sizable figure of those who have chosen the synodical system as a way to come to Concordia Seminary. So we give God praise for all those good things, and I'm thankful that I was able to share them with you.
We have many outstanding students at Concordia Seminary, and one of those students is Fred Bowie, who is graduating this year, however, will be staying at the seminary to do graduate work next year. He and his wife have been singing together, and they do just an outstanding job. And if you haven't heard them sing, you're in for a real treat right now. Fred and Jean.
When we perform together, we call ourselves Concord, just to have a name for the group. We're playing a concert, by the way, tomorrow night here on the seminary campus in Winnikin Chapel at 8 p.m., if any of you would care to come and hear a full program that we do, you're certainly welcome to come. We'd like to start out with a well-known hymn, A Beautiful Savior.
Beautiful Savior, King of creation, Son of God and Son of man.
I'd like to do an instrumental or two and begin with just playing a simple version of Abide With Me. You know, Martin Luther played the lute, which is an instrument that is similar in many respects to the guitar, and I often wonder, we're so used to hearing a mighty fortress is our God with full organ and chorus, I wonder if perhaps when he played it sometimes, it might have sounded like this.
Another outstanding man on our faculty is Dr. John Klotz, who is going to bring us update on our summer school for the summer. I'd like to mention something about him, which I'm sure some of you may know, but some of you may not know, is Dr. Klotz is not only a theologian, but he has a tremendous interest in science, particularly in the area of biology that he worked with extensively. Made a discovery some time ago, and I don't know if you saw it in Time magazine, the working that he found that you could take a part of a turtle's heart and it could be transplanted into a human heart with those who were having heart trouble. And the first operation was completed not so long ago right here at St. Mary's Hospital in St. Louis. You know where St. Mary's is? Just up here a couple of blocks. I want you to know that 3 weeks ago today, the first transplant on this was performed, and this afternoon, he finally reached the campus. Dr. Klotz, if you would.
Manny told me to keep it short. The last person that told me that was an undertaker. I went into the funeral home prepared to conduct the service, and he asked me to try to cut it short. He said that the family was taking it pretty hard and that perhaps it would be best not to overdo it. I found out that he had another funeral an hour later, and he was anxious to get rid of it. But Manny, I will try to keep my eye on the clock and not go too long. The Greeks had a word for it, pontarai, everything changes, and that's true also of academic programs. There was a time when school closed at the end of May with graduation and then took up again in September when the new students came in and the old students returned. But that's not been the case at Concordia Seminary for some time. We've had an extensive summer program for the past years here, and we're going to have an extensive program again this year. We try really to serve three groups of people. First of all, we try to serve the men who have not attended a synodical college and who want to study for the ministry, but because they did not attend a synodical school, they do not have the background in the biblical languages. And so we try to provide them with training in Greek and or Hebrew, as the case may be, and we try to do that in the summer so that they can catch up and carry through their program in the ordinary amount of time. Then we also try to meet the needs of our seminarians. Times have changed. A lot of these men have families. They are here in St. Louis. Many of them have jobs. They're working part-time during the school year, and they might just as well continue that pattern of part-time working and attending school. They do that in the summer, and in that way, they are able to accelerate their program and meet any particular needs and interests that they have. And then, of course, what we've always been interested in doing is meeting the needs of our parish pastors. Some of them want to go on for graduate study and an advanced degree. Others are interested in improving their skills, their abilities to serve their parishioners. So these are the three groups of people that we try to serve in our summer sessions. We have two summer sessions, one in May and one in June and one in July, and each one of these in turn can be broken up into a half period so that if a pastor, for instance, is able to get away from his congregation for only one Sunday, he may still attend summer school and at least take one course. So we try in that way to meet the needs of those who want to come to Concordia Seminary and be served here. Now, what sort of courses do we try to offer? Well, we seek to meet the particular needs of the pastors. We want to help them so that they can better serve the congregations that are committed to their charge. So this summer we'll be operating a variety of programs. We'll be offering a workshop in youth work. We'll have on that staff not only Dr. Harm, who is on our faculty, but also Mr. Bimler, who is worth the board for youth ministry. And we're going to try to help some pastors in their work with those people who we don't like to say are the future of the church. They are the church today, but they're going to be the church for quite a long time. Or we're going to be working with the Board for Missions in the mission training program. They will be sending the men who will be going out this year into the mission fields to our campus. They'll be here for both June and July, getting additional training and preparation for the work to which they've been called. And if they are married, their wives too will be here and will be participating in that program. So we're working together with the Board for Missions on that program. This year is the particular year of the handicapped, and also the church wants to recognize its obligations toward those who are bearing some particular cross of this nature. They certainly need to be served with the gospel. They need to hear the message of the forgiveness that we all have in Christ Jesus. So we'll be offering a course to assist pastors in working with those people who are bearing these particular crosses. Sometimes people become slaves to some of their habits, and they need pastoral assistance. Pastors need training in dealing with such individuals, and so we'll be offering a course in ministry to those who are subject to chemical dependencies, to drugs, to alcohol, and the like. We'll be helping pastors meet the need for assistance in parish administration so that they can carry out their work more effectively in their home parishes. And of course, we'll be offering a variety of courses which will assist pastors and our students in improving their basic theological skills. We'll be offering a course, for instance, in the Epistles of John, so that pastors can dig deeper into these letters of the great apostle and also improve their skills in mining God's word. We'll be offering a course in passion narratives, again, leading pastors more deeply into the word. We'll be offering a course in historical criticism, one of the critical issues of the day. So what we are trying to do is to meet the needs of our students and of our pastors and prepare them better for their work of carrying out the work of the ministry. That's the goal that we have in all of our programs, and that's the goal that we have in our summer school. And we're very happy that it looks again as if we will have a very good enrollment this summer. It's too early to determine exactly what the numbers will be, but the response so far has been very heartening, and we look for a very fine attendance this summer, too. Thank you.
One of the men that I work with most closely at the seminary is our director of development, Roger Meyer, who is doing a very, very fine job in area of development and charitable estate planning. He's going to give us an update on the Forward Fund. I say that he had a rather interesting phone call from the IRS only yesterday, in which the IRS asked him if so-and-so had was a contributor to Concordia Seminary, and he said yes. He said, did the gentleman contribute $10,000 to Concordia Seminary? And Roger said, no, but he will. Roger, if you will.
One of the first questions that many people have asked me since I've taken on the task of raising funds for the seminary and also in my past experience working in a college setting in Concordia and Seward, Nebraska, you know, has it changed your life much? How do you really like asking people to support it? Of course, I'm always pleased to tell them that I welcome the opportunity to share with them the needs and to ask them to become partakers in the ministry so that by making a gift you can share in the joy of ministry that we have. But I have noticed that I've changed one little characteristic that I've experienced. Some of you may have shaken hands with me earlier this evening. Instead of the normal handshake with the hand kind of perpendicular to the ground, I always turn it this way so that in case there's anything in a person's hand, I never lose it. This group of the lay leadership was a very core group in making the success of the Forward Fund a reality. It was through your efforts, through committees of last fall or a year ago last fall, and through your personal contributions that made this a springboard for us to go across the country and to seek gifts for the Forward Fund and not only to meet our goal but to exceed it. Originally, we had established a goal almost 2 years ago or more of $2.2 million. And at the close of our campaign, we had nearly reached or very close to $2.4 in our final accumulation of gifts. Of the various projects that we had in mind as we began the Forward Fund, some of those have already been utilized, and we have seen the results. One of those was the current needs of the 79-80 school year, which needed to be met, and those were met. Another reality of the Forward Fund was the need for student aid, and the number of the students that we have on our campus today have experienced the joy of receiving financial scholarship funds from the funds that were raised 1 year ago. Number of married students has been increasing on our campus, and the need for married student housing has become critical. We were able to add 22 units last year to our married student housing apartments so that we can house that many more students. We originally had counted on 12, and it had exceeded that because of a major gift of an apartment building last fall. Many of you will hopefully have the opportunity to tour some of the buildings that are being renovated. I have the pleasure of having my office in one of them, which is located between this building and the tower in Stuttgart Hall, which has been completed and is now beginning its occupancy. And very thrilled that I have the opportunity also to be there. It has really been a fine accomplishment and will be a blessing to the administration of the school. Two major projects are beginning in the very near future. Contracts have been let approximately a month ago. And a matter of fact, two of the families that are in the room today, next week will be beginning work on Lober Hall. The Greenwald brothers are the contractors on that building and will be beginning work hopefully next Tuesday. Also, the field house is in need of a roof, and that will begin in the very near future. The contract has been let on that building, and you should see work beginning there soon, and I imagine that'll be, about a month from now or so that they're expecting to begin that work. There are a number of special projects that have been completed, some that will be completed this summer. The Carillon needs some repair, and we'll have some work done. And the one that still perplexes the seminary in terms of its planning and the final outcome is the renovation of the chapel auditorium. And the planning committee is continuing to study the various options which we have before us to make that room and auditorium a more worshipful setting to conduct our chapel services. One of the big joys that we had when we completed the contracts for the two buildings recently, the Field House and Lober Hall, was that that finally qualified us to receive a grant from the Kresge Foundation. And Dr. Bowman had the joy to call me just, I think it was almost about a week ago, that we had received a letter from the Kresge Foundation that we had met their conditions, and that within the next 2 weeks we should be receiving a check for $100,000 from that foundation. So we continue to experience the joys of the Forward Fund. Thank you.
Concordia Seminary has been blessed in so many ways, and I think one of the indeed very fine blessings to our campus is Mr. Miller, who is the business administrator of Concordia Seminary, who will be telling us a little bit about the computer program in which we were entering into. I do have to tell you just one thing, however. It was about a month ago that I walked into Mr. Miller's office, and I happened to see a letter on his desk that was addressed to the IRS, and it was short, so I copied it down. I hope he doesn't mind that I share it with you. And remember, this is our business administrator writing to the IRS, and it says, "Gentlemen, I am not interested in this income tax service of yours. Could you please cancel out my name in your books, as the system has upset my mind, and I do not know who registered me as one of your customers in this matter. Sincerely, Marvin Miller." Marvin, if you would.
I'm not going to pay any attention to the last part of Dr. Jansen's introduction, but as I listened to the first part, I had two regrets, and the first of those is the fact that my father was not here to hear what he said, because I think he would have enjoyed it, and the other regret is that my mother was not here, because I know she would have believed it. I know all of you don't get excited when we talk about computers, but a number of us around Concordia Seminary are excited about computers these days. We have used some computer services for the last few years, but it has been sort of on a department-by-department basis. Some work is being done by the registrar, some in the business office, some in the library, and we do appreciate the help that these services provide for us. But there are some shortcomings. The fact that we carry duplicate information, each of those different areas has to have students' names and other information like this that's redundant. And what we would like to do very much is to share the information that each department has with all of the other departments needing that information. So we've been looking for some time about a way that we can accomplish this. We had several alternatives open to us. We considered the purchase of a computer by the seminary, and as all of you know, equipment has gone down in price for the last several years, and it's now at the point where it really is not out of sight as far as cost is concerned. But the people to support it, the staff, are very, very expensive. I guess if we look at computer programmers and others who work with computers, they demand very high salaries compared to most employees. So we felt that was prohibitive. The other thing that we considered is going with some service bureau, not just on a piecemeal basis as we have done, but to do everything with one service bureau. This too had its problems because it meant that we would have to wait for some period of time to have programs developed that would do precisely what we wanted to do in total. We had the opportunity a few months ago to receive a gift from AAL in the amount of $4,000, which was provided to help us do a 2-month computer pilot with one of our sister institutions, Concordia College in River Forest, Illinois. that gift plus another private gift or individual gift of $5,000 has made it possible for that pilot to take place, and we will begin processing perhaps as early as next week. We do have computer terminals on campus now. We have a printer, and one of the things that may seem strange is that we are going to enter information on a typewriter keyboard here at the seminary, send that across the telephone line to Chicago, do some processing, send it back, and print our reports out in one of our offices here. But this is very common these days, and one of the real advantages to doing this through River Forest Computer Department is the fact that they have the same budgeting system, the same account numbers prescribed by Synod. They need to have the same reports that we need to have. They do many things exactly the way we would like to do them. So at a very reasonable price, we can have, we think, everything that we need and want. And we can have it as early as next week. So there are a lot of advantages in going this way. And we are very grateful to AAL and the other donor who has made this pilot program possible. We think that at the end of the 2-month pilot, we very likely may continue working with River Forest in this way. And as I said, we're very excited. We think this is going to be a great benefit to the seminary. We hope to do many things that we are not able to do now simply because of the time-consuming task of looking through thousands of records by hand. We can do this in a matter of minutes with the computer and accomplish many things that will be helpful to us. Thank you.
One of the issues that I'm sure all of you are interested in that confronts our synod this summer at convention is the issue of fellowship with the ALC, and we are fortunate to have with us this evening Dr. Nasker, who will bring us up to date on this matter. I might tell you that it's kind of interesting to me to attend church a few weeks ago where he was preaching, and he was reading the Old Testament reading, and as he read it, and he came to the bottom of the page, and a couple of pages obviously stuck together, and he backtracked and read it again, and I think I found that place in the Bible, and this is what happened in church just a few weeks ago with Dr. Nasker. It said, "Now Jehiel took unto himself a wife of the daughters of Belial," and here he turned the page. "She was 18 cubits in height and 10 cubits in breadth." Now he noticed that that was not correct. He backtracked again and he said, "Now Jehiel took unto himself a wife of the daughters of Belial." Turned the page once again. "She was 18 cubits in height and 10 cubits in breadth." And he paused and he said, "I can only add that man is fearfully and wonderfully made, and or so is woman."
That actually happened, you know. Words are fragile things. And this is one of the things that plagues this whole discussion of fellowship. I don't know whether some of you saw the book that was published last fall, right at the height of our presidential election, entitled Our Hysterical Heritage. It was written by a school teacher who had compiled a number of sayings of grade school children trying to make sense out of what people were saying about the whole political process in our country. And it was amazing to hear what these children thought was going on whenever we elect a president. One child, for example, said, "Well, in this country, whenever we elect a president, we ask him to put his hand on a Bible and then to take some oaths." whatever that means. Another child said, "Well, it was that great American statesman Thomas Jefferson who proclaimed the right that every American had a right to four fathers." Another one, with perhaps more perception than he realized, said, well, the President of the United States is a very powerful man. He has the power to appoint and disappoint his cabinet. And perhaps the best one of all, one little child said, well, in this country about 100 years ago, we decided to let women vote, and we've had universal suffering ever since. I'm reminded of this every day. We have four small children in our home. The oldest one is 8, and the youngest one is 2, and he's just now learning how to put symbols and meanings together with words. And I'm also reminded of this whenever I go out in the church and speak about fellowship, because I discover that we have people who are talking about fellowship and using this word in so many different ways, and especially whenever we come to talking about fellowship with the American Lutheran Church. And I believe that many of our difficulties in this area can be rectified. We'll have more understanding whenever we come to some consensus and understanding as to what this term fellowship means and the various ways in which we use it. My understanding that my assignment tonight is to talk to you just a little bit about the CTCR recommendation on fellowship with the American Lutheran Church. And this is an issue which has been very much discussed and other things with it in recent months and weeks. I've been out in the Senate speaking in many parts of the church on this question. I just got back last week from the Southern District. I'm leaving again on Monday to go to the Southeastern District to talk about these matters. And everywhere I go, I'm going into districts who really are not too fond of the CTCR recommendation. Everyone is familiar with our recommendation, but thus far I have to find any part of the country that's very excited about it. I want to say a little bit about the recommendation. I assume that you know what it is. We've gotten a lot of publicity on that. The CTCR has recommended that the LCMS declare at its 1981 convention that it is not an altar and pulpit fellowship with the American Lutheran Church. And I want to say just a little bit about the background to this recommendation, the basis upon which it was made, the alternatives we considered, and the implications that it has for our life together in the Synod. Let me just briefly, in a couple of sentences, trace the history of our relationship to the American Lutheran Church. Back in 1969, by a vote of about 54% to 46%, and the first of a series of famous or infamous close votes, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod entered into a relationship of altar and pulpit fellowship with the American Lutheran Church. But in the very resolution in which we entered fellowship with the American Lutheran Church, provisions were made for a special commission to meet to discuss problems that existed in terms of our relationship. And so a commission on fellowship was brought into being to be composed of 6 individuals from either church body that would meet regularly to discuss problems that did exist and problems that would arise. Well, one of the first problems that arose was the very next year, in 1970, when the American Lutheran Church voted to declare that they would begin ordaining women into the pastoral ministry. In 1969, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod had just reaffirmed its traditional position that we understand those passages that speak about the role of women in the church to mean that women should not hold a pastoral office or carry out the distinctive functions of the pastoral office. So when the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod met in 1971, it voted to ask the ALC to reconsider its position, which had been adopted by another one of those close votes, about 55% to 45% in the American Lutheran Church. The American Lutheran Church reconsidered its decision, and by a vote of something like 900 to 1, reaffirmed its decision to ordain women in 1972.